We've been studying this week some of the sources on the application of the principle of Din Malchus Adina, the halachic rule that the law of the land is recognized by halacha as binding upon Jews to the sugya of intellectual property. According to one account, I think slightly hyperbolic, but according to one account of Rav Chaim Navon, he says there's practically no sefer that discusses Din Malchus Adina, that discusses intellectual property from a halachic perspective that doesn't invoke Din Malchus Adina. I haven't quite had that experience, and as far as I've seen, many or most of them don't. Nevertheless, there are a number of important sources that do discuss the application of the principle of Din Malchus Adina to intellectual property, and we'll try to summarize some of the main shitas, some of the main considerations for or against. So as we discussed earlier in the week, there are two or three or four concerns, problems with applying Din Malchusa to intellectual property. First of all, there's a general question about whether Din Malchusa is limited to questions where the government has its own interest, like taxation or regulating currency, or the more expansive view is that Din Malchusa applies everywhere, just the regulation, the maintenance of good order among the citizenry, among the body politic. Second question, the Rav Poskim would say that Din Malchusa doesn't apply anytime it directly contradicts the Torah. A third issue, Din Malchusa doesn't apply when a law is deemed to be unfair, unjust. Now, that third issue was not an issue I've seen anybody actually raise against applying Din Malchusa to intellectual property. Everyone seems to feel that the intellectual property regime is a good idea, is the sort of law which is just. And the main questions they discuss are the first two. Do we apply Din Malchusa to regulate commerce between two Jews? And B, do we apply Din Malchusa when it contradicts the Torah? Now, the Poskim all assume that the third issue is not an issue, that it is considered a just and righteous law. More and more today, we find many people disagree. Many people feel that the copyright regime, the pendulum, has swung far too much in the direction of too much restriction. There are entire movements, there are political parties all over the world, pirate parties who are lobbying for relaxation, if not outright abolition of intellectual property. There are, especially with the internet, there are millions and billions of people all over the world who don't feel copying is wrong. So certainly the scope of the law can be much debated as to whether the law really is just in its current implementation. But at least in the general sense, I think most people, there's still a pretty strong majority, at least in first world countries, that intellectual property rights are a good thing. Now, the two most prominent exponents of the view that Din Malchusa does apply to intellectual property were two contemporaries who corresponded with each other, the Beis Yitzchak, that's Rabbi Yitzchak Shmelkish, and the Hisar Rish Tshuva, that is Rabbi Shimon Sofer, grandson of the Chassam Sofer. He was the son of the Ksav Sofer, grandson of the Chassam Sofer. They both maintain firmly that Din Malchus Adina does apply to intellectual property, copyright laws. They both acknowledge that it seems to be against Torah, because Torah may very well not forbid copying, and the law does. And that is a problem, because Din Malchus, according to many poskim, most notably the Shach, does not apply when it contradicts the Torah. Nevertheless, it contradicts the Torah, right? So it's not as overt a contradiction as you might find. The Torah may just not have an opinion about it, but they seem to be assuming that the fact that copying is something which ought to be permitted by the Torah, and the law comes and forbids it, the law doesn't just clarify something that halacha leaves vague. If halacha is completely silent about intellectual property, you're right. One could argue that's not called a contradiction. That's called a hasafa. That's called adding something to the Torah. That's an interesting point, but they both seem to assume that this is called contradicting. This is called where the law says something which is against what the halacha would say.
Didn't we see several opinions that it was Morish Akilas Yaakov, that it was like the property of the Jewish people, essentially?
So then you're saying the halacha would dovetail very nicely with intellectual, with copyright law, you mean?
No, I'm sorry.
It belongs to everyone
and republishing
right.
It is so for the benefit of the...
That's an interesting point. So the poskim who invoked Morish Akilas Yaakov invoked it more in an exclusionary way to exclude non-Jews, but the flip side of that is it is public Jewish property. Although we did discuss that some people invoke Morash Akilas Yaakov even to make the Torah my personal right. So, for example, in the plagiarism discussion, Machne Chaim argued that if I plagiarize your Torah, I have stolen from you, because Morash Akilas Yaakov means that a person can own Torah, and he then interpreted that to mean that any individual Talmud Chacham who learns Torah has specific rights to the Torah. It's not just communal property. But you're right, one could argue that that Rosh HaKilas Yaakov means it's everyone's Torah. There are Gemaras that say that when somebody tried to deprive someone else of his Torah, he told him, it's the same Rosh HaKilas Yaanai, is it only your Torah? It's everyone's Torah. So yeah, there are definitely sources in Chazal like that too. Interesting point. Yeah, so I agree, this is a good point. One could definitely argue that that's not called contradicting the Torah.
In fact, one could even extend the idea of Mirastas, right? Mirastas, I mean, has one classical understanding. I mean, you can't fool somebody, you can't mislead somebody. But you are misleading somebody by saying it's your Torah and not his Torah.
So that's plagiarism. That's what we discussed last week. If you pass it off as being yours, if you don't properly credit, right, then there are poskim who call that stealing. Yes, the Machne Chaim calls that theft from the real author.
Isn't that intellectual property also?
Well, intellectual property applies even if you do credit him. Intellectual property means if I rip off your book and I publish it, even if I put a note in the front that says this novel is written by Dr. Maim, but I'm stealing it and republishing it, I can still get sued. The fact that I give you credit.
Does anybody separate the Torah copyright ideas versus secular? Because like writes children's books at night, and he wants that copyrighted versus Torah that belongs to everyone.
Yeah, so there are such svaras. So the Beis Yitzchak, for example, before he gets into Dina Malchusa, when he rejects the Sholem Eishiv, when he rejects some of those who say the halacha has an inherent notion of copyright, one of his arguments is that because it says Ma'ani Bechinam, there's a mitzvah in the Torah that a rebbe is really not supposed to charge for teaching Torah, we discussed a little bit earlier, even though we find a Torah for it, but it's really the wrong thing to do. So many poskim have argued that specifically with regard to Torah, you have less rights because it's a mitzvah, you're supposed to teach it, the Torah wants the Torah to. Yes, that is a svar. Okay. But regarding the law, so the Beis Yitzchak and the Hisar Rish Tshuva both argue that halacha recognizes the law, even if the law is against Torah, and they give several arguments for this. One argument, the Hisar Rish Tshuva's argument, is that since clearly it's a good idea, he says, and even if halacha doesn't require it, halacha certainly recognizes that it's not yosher, it's not right to take away someone's hard work and profit off it yourself. So he brings rayas from different cases that if halacha contradicts the law, halacha says this is wrong and the law says this is right, then we dismiss the law and follow the Torah. However, if halacha also agrees that it's the wrong thing to do, this halacha didn't make it an actual binding rule, then we follow the law, because then they're really going in the same direction, just that the law makes it obligatory, halacha didn't, then we follow the law. So since intellectual property rights, he says, are an intuitively persuasive notion, it's wrong to steal someone else's work and profit from it, therefore we recognize the law as making it binding, and halacha considers it binding too, based on the law. The Beis Yitzchak has a few other arguments for following Din Malchus HaDin in such context. First, he argues that the it's only minyas revach. He says, Din Malchus contradicts Torah, we don't follow, that's when it deprives somebody of a property right that he actually has. It's your property, and the law takes it away, that's not fair. But he says, here, it's just preventing you from profiting. You want to go into business using someone else's work. So we're not taking anything away from you. We're just telling you, don't do that. Don't engage in that particular endeavor. Since the law is not actually taking away, it's not depriving you of your actual property rights, just an opportunity to do something, that is fine. The other argument he makes is the same one as the, similar to the Sarvus Chuva's argument. He says, anytime the minhag dovetails with halacha, and the minhag dovetails with the law, if the minhag was to follow the law and people, the community, the business community, the Jewish community as a whole, adopted the laws the government passed as the way they do business, that's binding too. So the Sarvus Chuva said it's because we recognize the law as being fair and right, even if it's not binding al pi halacha, it's set native halacha. And he says because since the law was accepted, the law was, people generally followed it, in such a case, Minhag ratifies the Din Malchusa and it becomes binding on Jews too. Rav Ezra Batsri, noted Dayan in Eretz Yisrael, also argues at length that the primary argument for intellectual property in halacha is basically Din Malchusa and Minhag. Also, he spends a lot of time in Minhag. Perhaps we'll return to that in a later date, but largely Din Malchusa. And he says, again, similar to these Achronim, he says, you have to follow it. He says, we need an intellectual property regime. He says, intellectual property is a form of Gneva and Gzela. That's exactly where the government needs to step in to regulate, prevent people from stealing from each other. The Chazal tell us we should pray for the welfare of the government. If not for fear of the law, ishes reyu chayim below. One man would devour another. So we need the government to impose basic order. And the truth is, this is debatable also, because as the anti-copyright people like to point out, The Constitution of the United States, from which our intellectual property law all derives, the congressional right to pass laws for intellectual property, it does not really define intellectual property fundamentally as a property right. It says, you know, we believe that the Creator has endowed us with life, with the right to life, to liberty, pursuit of happiness. Property rights are fundamental. Intellectual property, the way the Constitution defines it as, the way the Constitution defines it is, in order to promote the useful arts and sciences, therefore the Congress shall have the right to give the creators of these useful arts and sciences the exclusive right to their works, pass laws to give them some rights. So it was very much set as a utilitarian rule. It wasn't because people had some inherent right, fundamental government right. It was because the framers of the Constitution felt that you need to pass such laws to promote the arts and sciences. People argue, again, and the anti-copyright, anti-patent people argue that today they're not promoting things. Today they're locking up research. They have positive consequences. They have negative consequences. But it's not at all obvious that it's a fundamental right that people need, that it's basic fairness. Nevertheless, most of the early acronym, as we noted earlier, most of the early acronym who discuss intellectual property do take for granted that it's a fundamental, like they do on the Shalomeshiv. It's a kind of natural law thing. It's intuitively obvious, he says. Most of the early acronym came down very much on the side. Rabatsky is actually not so early. He's only a generation or so ago. Come down pretty squarely, though, on the side that intellectual property rights are a fundamental natural right kind of thing, and that's why we follow Din Malchusa, because it makes sense, because the minhag is to follow it, because it's yosher, and all these, and we need it, because otherwise society needs such laws. So this is probably the dominant view of the poskim, that we do apply Din Malchusa Dina to intellectual property.
Well, what is violation of that? It would be violation of Zeira Drabanan, you are violating? In other words, they say it's just an extension of what we ordinarily do. Does the violation of that?
Well, the law, I think, would grant the innovator, the copyright holder, would grant him a right in Choshen Mishpat. And it's like you took something from someone. You infringed on a right. The Chazal, just like what Chazal made Takanas, they grant people rights. And if we learned Hasagas Gvul. We learned Yard Lomnus, which going to many posts, are also Drabanan. On him, Hapik might be Drabanan to these things. Chazal made rules in Choshen Mishpat, exactly whether it's called Gzela or just called doing something Chazal didn't like. I mean, it's an interesting question, how to define exactly what's wrong with it. Would you become Pasul Eidus for doing it? Are you considered a Gazlan Gummer? Interesting question, very likely not. But yeah, that's a good question. But in any event, this is what I think is more or less the consensus view that Dina Malchusa Dina does apply to intellectual property law. The one exception I found, the one posik I know of who disagrees is a sefer called Vayan David. I keep forgetting his name. It's Yosef Chaim David or some combination there of Weiss, a distinguished Mara Hara, Satmar Mara Hara in Antwerp. He argues that Din Malchusa does not apply to intellectual property because he argues, going back to the first point, that not all poskim agree that we follow law that in which the government has no direct interest, which is just meant to regulate the affairs of individual citizens. And he acknowledges that many poskim say that we do. We do take the broader, more expansive view of Din Malchusa. But he says it's machlokas. At the end of the day, he says there's no clear consensus. So much nechrel v'raya. You can't force the infringer to cease and desist because the halacha is not clear on this point. Now, his basic point is correct. His basic point is absolutely true that there is no absolute consensus on this question of whether Din Malchusa should ever be applied to regulate affairs between two private citizens. However, first of all, as he acknowledges, many, perhaps most poskim, from the Ramah on downward, Hungarian poskim in general, do feel that Din Malchusa should be interpreted broadly, and I think that is the mainstream view. And B, another point one would raise is that it's true that if someone is the Muksuk and someone else wants to be Motzi Manon, then the rule is, and even if I have some opinions that side with me, you can't force me to give over the money. But a Suffolk Zela is worse. If I want to do something, I want to go out and infringe, and it might be an Isser, I'm not the muksik here. I want to go and infringe on a right that you may have, that the law or the halacha may grant to you. It's not so pashut that I'm in the position to say, Kimli, to say, I want to follow the minority opinion here. If I'm actively doing something that might be a form of gzela, not so clear to me that there's really a justification for following a minority view. In any event, he himself is somewhat of a minority view, an outlier view, that we don't follow Din Malchusa. Most poskim argue that we do. Just briefly, two other arguments in favor of applying Din Malchusa Dina, even though it may contradict the Torah, even though it may be an overly broad interpretation of Din Malchusa. Just briefly, two other arguments for applying the the rule of Din Malchus Adina, one of them is democracy. While virtually all poskim agree that democratic governments have are at least as good as the autocratic dictatorial governments of earlier generations, there's a virtual consensus on this point that it's at least as good. Some poskim go even further and say democracies are better. Since democracies are a much more direct and transparent expression of the people's own will, that's more powerful than the non-representative governments of yore. And all these rules the poskim have about contradicting the Torah and maybe it shouldn't be interpreted so broadly, those were the autocratic governments of 1,000 years ago. But today's governments, which are democratically expressed will of the people, they have absolute power. They can do whatever they want, even if it goes against Torah, even if it goes against, even if it's between private citizens. This is the position of the Ohel Yoshua, of Yeshua Pinchas Bambach, and the Tzitz Eliezer likes this rule also, that with democratic governments, all restrictions are off, and they can pretty much do whatever they want, even if it doesn't meet the criteria of Din Malchus Adina laid down by earlier generations. One last argument for applying Din Malchusa, we distributed copies of Rav Henkin's attitude, which is that when we don't have our own communal structures, we don't have our own basin, we don't have autonomous sovereign government, we're forced to incorporate some rules of the government. That's the idea of Din Malchus Adina, but that's an especially strong case for Din Malchus Adina. There's a tshuva in the Pa'as Sadcha, Shmuel David Monk. He was discussing whether Din Malchus Adina applies in Eretz Yisrael, and there are certain reasons why it might not in contemporary Eretz Yisrael. But he says, but to some extent, we have to adopt some of the legislation, he says, because we can't. What are we going to do? We don't have a parallel structure that works. We have to rely on the law because it's the only game in town, he says. We need some kind of legislation. So this is another argument that it's one thing if we have our own kehillas, like in the time of the Shach, in the time of the Rishon, we had our own kehillas, we can make our own rules, then we can ignore the rules of the government and make our own rules. But we live in secular society. We don't have our own bodies that can make and enforce rules. And we need some kind of rules. You know, the rules have to be updated to meet the needs of modern society. So various poskim say this, propose this thing, that where we don't have our own rules and we feel the need for some rules, similar to what we said earlier, that anytime it's something that the Torah also thinks is a good idea, mentioned at the beginning of the week, the Chasam Sofer, if they would come to us, we would make the same takana, just we don't have our own kehila. This is another idea that if we don't have our own sovereign rulemaking bodies, that's an additional case for deferring to the law of the land.